live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about flavonoids, and that's when you eat an onion or an apple, and how important they are in promoting broad health and preventing premature aging from Harvard School of Public Health. And also for a lot of people in this audience, plan ahead for successful aging. This is from Florida State University. And nutrient-rich tomatoes can help against heart disease, a new study out. Also, how there are magic markers in oats, meaning by eating oatmeal, you can have a much lower cholesterol, a healthier heart, better arteries. St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto did some research on that. And from the National University of Singapore, how consuming the neem, that's N-E-E-M, plant could significantly suppress development of prostate cancer. And we've heard this idea that you're working yourself to death. According to Indiana University, it's true. When you have no control over a high-stress job, it leads to an early grave. I'll explore that. And also to help improve the impaired cognition if you're older, DHA, Journal of Alzheimer's Research. So we have a lot on health and healing today, as we always do. We also have a lot of people joining us for the first time. And the question is from some of them, why do you mention this scientific article of the university where it's done? Because we would like to think that we are the record of choice for everything involving the environment and human nutrition longevity. Just like some people have said, well, the New York Times is the paper of record, so if it's in the Times, it must be accurate. That may or may not be the case on all issues. But when it comes to health, I have found that everything that supports an alternative healthy lifestyle can be found in mainstream science and medicine. And also for 35, 40 years, all of us in the alternative health field have been under rather constant surveillance and attacks by trolls and so-called quackbusters who would like to believe that anything that we suggest is not scientifically based. Turns out just to be the opposite. Everything we recommend is scientifically based. What they recommend is their opinion. So that's why I do that. Now also today I'm going to have a guest on for longer than normal. My guest is Charles Ortel. You probably have never heard of him, except that he is one of the most important whistleblowers in all of whistleblowing history. And he is going to tell us things that directly challenge Hillary Clinton's statements that her foundation and her husband and her have done so much good for Haiti, and she has 90% of all the money the foundation gets, it gives away to charities. Trouble is, it's not true. But we can't just speculate. We want hard data. Charles Ortel is a former Wall Street banker, having been a managing director at Dillon Reed, one of the more respected firms, as well as Newport Value Partners. And in 2007, he became a whistleblower. He was the one responsible for bringing down General Electric after revealing GE's fraudulent overvaluing of its stock by many billions of dollars to mislead its investors. So he has done the research on the Clinton Foundation, and we'll hear his analysis. Now, I wanted to offer more time. Also today, I wanted to share some audio clips. One I think you will find extremely interesting, and that is, it's a clip about Assad, the president of Syria. We've been led to believe by Donald Trump, by Barack Obama, by virtually the entire mainstream media and Democracy Now! And others in alternative media that it was a good thing what we did in Libya, liberating the people from Gaddafi. But it wasn't. And it's a good thing what we're doing, keeping Assad from assassinating so many of his citizens because they don't like him. But it's not true. And we have presented detailed documentation from people who have been in Syria, who've come back, who've told us the truth. Now, today, you're going to hear from President Assad himself in a very interesting discussion. So I think you'll find this discussion by a Swiss journalist, one of the best Swiss journalists. He asks hard questions, but listen to his answers. Because when I listened to his answers and we did independent research, we found he was telling the truth. That means the media is lying. But it's in the answers you're going to have a whole new insight and understanding of this problem. And also for all of the people who believe that we should have Hillary because she's a woman. And there were studies done that just because she's a woman, nothing else, and it's her turn, or it's a woman's turn. Okay. Does it matter who the woman is? Does it matter what they've done? Does it matter, does she represent feminist principles? So here's women speaking back on that. I don't know how much time we'll have for each of these, but we'll get as much in as possible. And let's begin. As much as I can motivate people to start using a whole foods diet and a living foods diet, meaning more raw foods, more juices, and more dried fruits and vegetables and plants that are dried without high heat, meaning below 120, 115 degrees, therefore it's still raw, meaning all your antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients are still intact. It's just a more convenient way to store. When I travel, I'll be traveling in the near future to a refugee camp. My goal to help provide food for 15,000 to 20,000 individuals. So I'm going to not be able to find stuff when I travel. Rarely do. Dried stuff, but in bags. I just eat it dried, or I can hydrate it. And then, of course, you want lightly cooked, where even the cooking is not so high that it in any way scorches or chemically alters the food in any negative way. And when you do that, you're getting a lot of flavonoids. Flavonoids are extremely important. They're the anti-aging, anti-disease part of a plant. Now, according to the Nurses' Health Study, which is a huge study, it's been going on for decades, largest women's health study in American history, these flavonoids, quote, are important to promote broad health and well-being in aging, according to Harvard School of Public Health. And women who took in the largest amounts of the flavones and the anthocyanidins and the flavanols, that's what you get when you have an apple, a peach, grape, a pear, they had the greatest odds of aging in a healthy way, quote, no major chronic diseases or major impairments in cognition or physical function or mental health were defined in these healthy aging people. And the findings were further substantiated by consistent data from flavonoid-rich diets, including oranges, all of the berries, onions, which are top of the list, apples, top of the list. And this was also independently confirmed from scientists from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School and the French National Institute in Medical Research and the University of Bordeaux. So, quote, from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, flavonoids may contribute to reducing chronic disease and maintaining physical, cognitive, and mental health with aging via their potential to decrease oxidative stress and inflammation, which are two general pathways underlying many age-related chronic diseases and health conditions. So there you have it. It's really simple. Get away from the standard American diet of everything deep fried and browned, charcoaled and sweetened with sugars. Get away from that. Get back to more natural and you'll live a longer life and a much healthier life. This is something for all of you. I talk about this at my retreats when I do a retreat once or twice a year. And there I have 2 to 3 hours every single night that I discuss this. So it takes a lot of input to give the whole picture, but I'll give you just a brief overview, enough to allow you a chance to see what I'm discussing. When we plan for aging, and rarely do people actually plan for aging, the most that most people will do is that they'll plan financially. They may, in their 30s or 40s, seek to buy a house where they ultimately would like to retire to, or at least have a second home. If it's in a nice environment, at least part of the year, they're called winter birds, they go there. I do the same thing. I like to travel and do my filming and get to my home in a nice warm environment, because it's a whole lot nicer than being where it's really bad weather. That's just one thing. But what we also have to do is we have to have a way of asking ourselves, are we living a meaningful and purposeful life that is productive to our ultimate ideal self? Now, that's the big question. What I'm seeing now in many of my friends, as well as people I counsel daily, is people have worked hard. And they've succeeded. Every one of them has mastered fields. And they've been recognized. Most of them have a standard of living that meets their needs. But there's also something I'm seeing that's missing. There's like a void, an emptiness. And depending upon how busy they are, they can either keep running away from this void and emptiness, or one day they're overwhelmed by it, in which case they frequently get depressed or they become acutely anxious. And yet they can't really define, why are you anxious? Why are you depressed? What's wrong in your life? What can't you control? And they think, I'm in control of everything. Do you have debt? Are you afraid of losing a home, a car, a job? Can you pay your credit card bills? The average American has $16,000 just in credit card debt. It's a huge amount, but they'll pay almost $40,000 by the time the credit card is paid off because of all the interest they're going to be paying when they only can pay a small amount. No, that's not it. Then what is it? And then when you begin to talk with them and they tell their story, and you really just have to be bearing witness in silence and not judgment. And when you can do that, sooner or later, it comes out. I had someone share a story with me. And this was so easy to figure out. A person wakes up in the middle of the night and they see fire all around them. Everything is on fire. They feel the heat, but they're not burnt. They can hear the crackling and they feel they can't move. And then when they get up out of bed, there's no fire there, of course. And then that's it. Well, then jump forward, and suddenly you see that they could easily represent the fire becomes that place in Dante's hell that metaphorically or emotionally or spiritually we can place ourselves for what opportunities we sabotage, what we didn't do, what we could have, should have, but something was missing. And more often than not, what was missing was the dominant energy of self. What took its place was the conditioned energy, the energy that is a child, as a baby, as a youngster and toddler, a teen, prepubescent. All of these stages, we're watching the world around us. We're taking it in. It's very hard when we're very young to separate out what is a normal expression of love, a normal expression of anger, a normal expression of grief. We take it all in as if it's all real. And then it forms our basis of our reality. We become an extension of everyone else's reality. And epigenetically, it can go back several generations. It can go back hundreds of years epigenetically. We're carrying the energy, the vibration, and the memory of that energy in ourselves. Now, here's where if I were giving a discussion of this in depth for 3 hours, I would explain how your eyes blink every 8 to 15 seconds to create tears so that you're not chafing your eyes and going blind, how you're creating saliva in your mouth so that you can chew your food, but you're chemically digesting it with enzymes like ptyalin and amylase that insalivate your food, that if you eat tofu, it's going to digest differently than if you ate fish, which is different than asparagus, which is different than brown rice. How does the stomach know? You look at a salad. It looks great. You eat it. It tastes good. You even eat it properly. You don't just gulp it down. You take your time. You enjoy it. But 35 minutes later, you've got massive diarrhea. Why? Well, there was some bacteria on there you didn't see. Well, how does my body know that it's a bacteria? How does it know what bacteria it is? How does it know it's not a good bacteria? Instead, it's a bad bacteria, and the only way the body can help you is by purging it. How does your body know to make your nose run, to have you cough, to get phlegm out? Because in the phlegm in your throat and the mucus in your nose, there's bacteria. How does it know? How does it know that your heart should slow down when you're lying down? Your heart should pick up a little bit when you're sitting up. Your heart should pick up more when you stand up. Your heart should pick up more when you walk. Your heart should pick up even faster when you jog. But when you slow down again and stand up and sit down and lie down, the heart increasingly goes from one stage of activity to another. Who tells it to do that? Where did it learn to do that? How does your hair know and your nails know to grow this keratinized tissue at a certain rate? How does your body keep perfect balance? Even if you're 700 pounds, it doesn't put all the weight in one leg. Now, theoretically, there is no law in biochemistry or physiology that says that weight has to be proportional and balanced. But right in front of us, it's doing it. So when you gain weight in your hips, it'll proportion it so you can still stand upright. Otherwise, what if all that extra weight was just in your calves? You couldn't move your legs. You'd fall backwards. What if it was on right side, your right thigh? You'd fall to that side. The things we don't even ask ourselves, we have no answer for, because this is all about energy. And energy is life. And the life energy is coded. And the code is broken into vibrations. And the vibrations carry the message. So intrinsically and congenitally over millennia, we are passing down vibrations of survival, the flight or fight instinct, but also those of bonding, love, caring, nurturing. So one day we wake up and we have allowed conditioned from our environment, from our input, to be the dominant energy in our lives. Now that's a problem, because not all of our development is good and not all of it's bad. It's some combination, depending upon the nurturing, the kindness, the love of our parents, the wisdom. Were they really good parents in knowing how to care for us, allowing us to evolve, but also giving us some parameters? Because one day you wake up and you may be overachieving in a job, or you may be fearful of trying in a job. You may want to excel at something, and you may be fear of failing at something. You see, my experience is it's not a fear of death that most people have as they grow older. It's the anger of not having lived their own life, but living through other people. So if you're going to live through other people, then that's the fire. Now, I'm only referring to one person. Each other person has a way that they express an unrequited existence. In this person's case, it manifested so that they stayed in perpetual paralysis, as far as not physical paralysis, but their life would never go forward. Everything was, well, the best of their life was behind them. There was nothing they looked forward to that was better than what was in the past. And that's because of all the opportunity this person told me that they had had and didn't do anything with. They did not take advantage of the opportunities when they had them. Now what they had was this deep inner sadness. And hence the vision of fire was, I cannot move. I'm surrounded by fire. And as a result, I'm stuck. And hence, when you're stuck, your body is telling you you're sick. And so you manifest real physical conditions. The conditions are real. The cause is not. Now try to explain to someone who has massive candida. They'll tell you it's sugar. They'll go on a diet that has no yeast in it. But that's not the cause. So we confuse the symptoms of our illnesses with the actual causes, more often than not. There's a strong contributing factor in so many people where they have not lived their own authentic life. They have been obedient to someone else's expectations. And then when you see a door in front of you, but on the door is a big sign, it says guilt. Do not enter this door if you have any guilt. Then you turn around and say, okay, and you go to the back door, and the back door says shame. Shame on you. And you think, well, gee whiz, if I've got guilt and shame, then you go to the side door. It says fear, insecurity, uncertainty. Then you turn to the other side, and that's my only door left. And it says anger and depression, because depression frequently comes from anger, what you cannot resolve. So now, no matter what you do, no matter where you turn, you're trapped. And then a person thinks, well, how did I get here? How do I move on? How do I heal? And this is where it's more than a diet. And this is what I was suggesting, that we've got to plan for our future by planning what life we intend to live. Here is where I'm coming to on this. If we do not know what we need to be in our future, then all we're doing is taking all of the dysfunction, the disappointment, the fears, the limitations, and the epigenetic conditioned self into the next day. So one day we say, well, it's a new day. It's not a new day. It's everything I brought with me. What'd you bring with me? Everything I could. Because it's on a subconscious level, I brought all this subconscious stuff in. Fears, shame, guilt, self-sabotaging, didn't take advantage of everything, stayed immobile on so many levels. I just lived through the functionality of ritual. I showed up, but I didn't become exuberant. I wasn't a happy camper. So it's becoming that happy camper, living your own authentic life, making the sacrifices necessary to free yourself from the subordinate energies where they should be to the dominant energies of you. We've reversed it. What guides our life is the dominant energies, and the dominant energies could be based upon insecurity, and therefore I'm going to get mine. Look over Wall Street. Look over America right now. Look at how many very powerful people are being arrested out on Nassau County, the top person politically out there. He and his wife were arrested yesterday for greed. Well, they had all the things you could imagine. Why would they want more? Then look at the, at one point, one of the wealthiest men in America, Michael Milken. He received the largest amount of money up to that point in 1 year in a salary of any person in the history of Wall Street, $1 million at that time. $1 billion, I should say, but it wasn't enough to keep him honest. He broke the law. He engaged in insider trading. So he went to prison and was fined. How can you think when you're in prison, gee whiz, I had $1 billion? Now I'm in prison. My reputation is affected. Why? Why did I need any more? And here's the issue. If you're living in a non-authentic life, then you will harmonize with greed, envy, jealousy. You'll be motivated by more. And somehow when you work hard to get more, it will never allow you to feel complete or filled. So when we look around us, we see some of the most vile aspects of human nature paraded in front of us, whether it's the Cardassians, who are vapid, they have no intellect. They couldn't spell intellect. And yet they're making hundreds of millions of dollars, and yet everything that they do represents their own insecurity and having to live as public objects where every single thing they do, they have to take a selfie and then share it. And then think of the millions of people who need to be a part of them, so they become subordinate, the subordinating energy, to the media antics of a celebrity in a celebrity culture that dominates. So how many times does the celebrity culture dominate? The athlete that is a good athlete but then has to do all of these strange and exotic, bizarre dance and rituals, they've already made the play. They've made a touchdown or whatever they're achieving. Why not just enjoy the game? Why go through these rituals? Because there's an insecurity. They have to show that there's still more that you should pay attention to them. So then these people who are so insecure want us to put our energy into theirs. So we end up harmonizing negatively. We then promote exhibitionism. We promote exaggeration. We no longer can handle simplicity, austerity, spirituality, giving without expectation. Everything becomes an ulterior motive. We're not going to do anything. What's in it for me? What am I getting? And then one day, we're not moving forward. We're moving in a circle, in a negative feedback loop. So think of the people listening right now. You've worked hard. You've done the best you can. Now ask yourself this. What are you harmonizing with? Who are you harmonizing with? Are you harmonizing with people who will harmonize at the spiritual level or at the need level? Because if people are harmonizing with you at the guilt, shame, anger, depression, anxiety level, that's only going to reinforce and enable that. So all the more you do, there'll be no good outcome from it. And one day you'll wake up and you'll be as empty as you were when you started your journey. So take time, do some introspection, plan for your future on all levels, nutritionally, spiritually, creatively. Put it all together and do it for yourself this time. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment with our guest. Please stay with us. You know you could have been a handle the way you swept me off the field. You know you could have been a broom the way you smell so sweet. You know you could have been some perfume. Well, you could have been. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. Nice to have you. Before we go to Charles Ortel, who's standing by to speak with us, I just want to play one clip. I don't think we'll have time to get the Assad clip, but this is a group of individuals who decided to speak back about we need a woman for president. Okay, let's go now to my guest, Charles Ortel. I gave you his background earlier. Nice to have you with us today, Charles.
It's my great pleasure to be on this show, and I'm going to have to struggle to contain my laughter. What an ass.
I couldn't help but play that. Charles, most of us think the Clinton Foundation was started after the Clinton's second term in office. However, it was launched in 1997, and since then, you have discovered it has been a rogue charity that has never operated lawfully since its inception because it was originally mandated to be responsible for Clinton's presidential archives. Also, over the years, the foundation has managed to dodge being properly audited. So it seems like the charity operates and functions largely in the shadows. So please review just how much of a rogue charity this foundation is. And then, since the Clinton-friendly media continues to support Hillary wholeheartedly in the elections, the foundation and the Clinton's activities in countries such as Haiti should receive some attention. The media gives it no attention. We did a half of a program yesterday on Haiti and the Clintons because in her debate, Hillary Clinton said that 90% of the money that her foundation receives goes to charity. Is that true? And separately, how much she and her husband and foundation have done to help enhance the lives and suffering of people in Haiti. Well, we had on Haitians, including a Haitian investigative journalist, who said none of that was true. It was just the opposite. They had been interfering politically in Haiti as if somehow they had a right to, and they hadn't helped anyone. In fact, just today we found out that some of the houses, like trailers, were filled with formaldehyde. They didn't have air conditioning. They were insufferably hot. They had toxic outgassing. And the kind of same cheap ones that were given to the people who couldn't live in them after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. So what we're told in the public, but the media, mainstream media will not verify and fact check for us, is what we'd like for you to do today. So the foundation scandals have simply marginalized or been marginalized or denied to protect Hillary Clinton from the scrutiny that should be undertaken for her to be a truthful occupant of the Oval Office. So what do you feel are the most important scandals or illegal activities that can be tied directly to Hillary's career in Washington that are most being censored by the media? The forum is yours. Take your time.
Well, thanks so much. And before I get into answering specifically your question, I just want to say that when I got started on this adventure last year, I knew that I hit on something really profound and big that the American public across the political spectrum needed to get really stuck into. And so I really appreciate the chance to be on this forum with you. It's not a natural forum for me. I come out of a conservative economic background, but I'm very open-minded socially. And, you know, one of the things that's striking about this country, America, that it does make all of us who are here and privileged to be here, fortunate to be in an exceptional environment, is how generous people are. When disaster strikes, whether people are poor or rich, and very frequently it's poor people, will reach into their pockets and send bits and pieces towards a disaster like Haiti that you mentioned. And sadly, the ghouls, and I say this fervently because of what's come out of WikiLeaks, and now we see the inner workings of how the operatives in the Clinton Foundation think, the ghouls who work inside the Clinton Foundation, who are manipulating the books, who've turned off the controls, who've arranged so that accountants don't get a true look at the books, so that trustees don't actually see what's going on. Those ghouls have positioned the Clinton Foundation, after Bill left office, to stand in front of disaster after disaster around the world and intercept funds, whether they're government grants from foreign governments or from our government, or large grants from foundations, or pools of money that go towards the Katrina disaster, the Gujarat disaster in India in 2001, or the tsunami, or Haiti 1, 2, and 3. Gigantic pools of money get sent towards the foundation. And if you have no controls, which this has never had any financial controls, it's been confirmed now by one of the world's, if not the leading expert in the world on New York nonprofit corporation law, one of the top three, got a chance in 2011, we learned this week, in the last 7 days, to look inside at information you don't get to see. And there's an email that says accountants have told the board and told them that the accounting principles are just illegal. Basically, they're not allowed to be used, the ones that they were using. And in consequence, I can tell you as a financial guy that nobody, no outsider actually knows how much money was sent towards the Clinton Foundation. So when you get to the statement Hillary made, there are numerous lies, and it's embarrassing, frankly, how boldly that person and her ilk are prepared to lie in front of a gigantic global audience. Nobody knows how much money was sent towards the Clinton Foundation. There's never been any control, so nobody knows whether, you know, 2% or 3% or 5% or 10% was actually devoted towards charity. The overheads in that charity are absurd, the ones that are disclosed. You take this charity, which manages, let's call it $350 million to half $1 billion, contrast it to the Gates Foundation, which has its own issues. They have about the same staff, and Gates has like $30 billion plus. Why do you need so many people in the Clinton Foundation? The answer is it's a dumping ground for operatives supporting the Clinton political and personal enterprises who are paid by the donors. And, you know, when I think about I'm involved with a charity that shall remain nameless, operated by people across the political spectrum to try to help the survivors of Srebrenica in Bosnia. And this is a charity where there are no administrative expenses because somebody has arranged to pay all of them out of his, you know, no donor has to pay for any administrative expenses. They're kept to a bone. And it's totally, you know, no limelight is sought, no advertisements, and quietly, this charity of private people, and it's a small charity, has helped restore a semblance of dignity to 200 of the surviving families by giving them a home, just giving them a simple home, but a home nonetheless, for these families to try to restore themselves. And by taking the best, you know, the ablest and most promising children in that country, that war-torn, scarred country that's been pervasively afflicted for centuries, frankly, take the best of those people and give them the boost they need to get education around the world. That's just a small example. There are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of these charities, and they're operated by progressives and conservatives and, who knows, communists and right-wing, alt-right, you name it. These are people who give of their time, of their energy. They're not looking to go on private jets or fancy presidential suites or run for office or make money off these charities. They truly want to help. And I think it was Montesquieu who noted that on a trip through America in the 18th century, that what sets this country apart from others he had known at that time, and I think it's the same today, is that that's exactly what we do. All of us, we give to charity in small bits. We give of our time. We give of our attention. To see these ghouls, to see the truth about what the Clintons have done from the beginning, from the inside, now emerge and be confirmed through WikiLeaks, to imagine that this team would honestly believe that they should have the right to get back inside the White House again. And as your commercial points out, you know, one of the things I can say from the right, from the political right, that unites us with the political left is we do not believe, I think a vast overwhelming majority of Americans does not believe that we need a national security apparatus to spy on us. We don't believe in that. We don't believe watching the great gigantic bureaucracies fall down after 1998 as technology got more and more powerful. We don't believe that we need gigantic and unaccountable government bureaucracies and a perpetual state of war to feed the military-industrial group. We just don't believe in that. And, you know, we don't believe that war is inevitable. But it seems that this group, resident primarily in Washington, D.C., that feeds off this gigantic mess wants to keep us in a state of ignorance, as that ad points out, you know, wants to lock us down in an educational system that strangles people, that strangles their interest in self-inquiry. And anyway, when you look at this Clinton Foundation, it is a case study in global charity fraud, and sadly, it is just a piece of the puzzle. The Clinton Foundation is allied with other very large foundations. It seems we've learned in the last week that the Clinton Foundation has had, I should say, until now, a secret office downtown in the bowels. Actually, it was, I think, the prime tenant is Goldman Sachs. It's not on the forms that are required to be filed here in New York. As a charity, you have to disclose all of your office locations to avoid precisely this operation. And it seems that the Clinton Global Initiative has been used as a business development exercise for Goldman Sachs and for investment firms and law firms and accounting firms and consulting firms and other sponsors of these various projects. And because they've turned off the controls, they've turned off the auditors, no one really yet knows how gigantic this operation is. But as a guess, I've said in the past it's $100 billion. Based on what we've learned in the last week, it would not surprise me if this total scandal were in the trillions of dollars. And, you know, I think it's just past time for us to confess that we don't have a regulatory system in place that can keep these gigantic multinational for-profit and not-for-profit organizations, bring them to heel. We just don't have it. Instead, we have a system where those who might regulate it or should regulate it quickly figure out it's better to play along with the system and feast off it than it is to try to reform it. I sent, Gary, I don't know if you got it, but I sent you an email moments before I came on with a passage that I don't have in front of me from Thomas Jefferson. The only book he ever wrote was Notes on the State of Virginia. And it is a fantastic work to look at. However you may feel about Jefferson, his mind was unbelievable. And in it, he predicted in 1782 precisely where we are today. And that is in what he called then not a revolution, but a convulsion, a convulsion. And he predicted that our rights would either expire or be revived in a convulsion. And that's what I think we have here. On the left side, you know, I think the Clinton machine stole the nomination from Bernie based on, you know, just, I'm not a political expert, but I live here in Manhattan, and my son and daughter are both proud Bernie supporters, and they dragged me to something, Washington Square Park. I was amazed at what I saw, and I saw tremendous enthusiasm there and, you know, in the media for Bernie, but somehow he seems to have lost out. The nomination was stolen from him, and now the establishment media and the right-wing establishment is terrified of Trump, maybe for some good reasons. But who knows what we're going to have in this election. And I hear, you know, yeah, you mentioned Haiti. I've had the fortune to travel to 65 countries in my life, some many, many times. I've been to desperately poor places, worse off than Haiti. The notion, the former president of the United States and now the first laddie, the proposed first laddie, would for years exploit the situation in Haiti to his personal and political advantage, and then expect to get back into power is so disgusting. I had the great fortune through, I think, a mutual friend, Dottie Cherry and Utrice Lead, to be introduced to the team of Haitians that is here in Manhattan protesting regularly in front of the Clinton campaign office, the Harlem office. This week it was the Midtown office. I know lots of other people who are telling me the truth in Haiti, and it's disgusting what they do, but it's even worse because there's so many good people in this country. I may disagree with their political views, but when it comes to helping others, there's so many good people who go around the world and try to help. And to see a former president and an aspiring president and their family do this type of stuff and so corrode the image that Haitians have of what Americans, you know, will put up with. You know, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton was asked, you know, what Bill Clinton's going to do if she wins. And she had the audacity to say that Bill Clinton would revitalize the American economy. If he revitalizes, Lord help this economy, if Bill Clinton is to revitalize a vastly more complicated economy than Haiti in the same way in which he has destroyed Haiti, he's done more damage down there than the hurricane and the earthquake combined. And that's just one country. You know, because I've been on this mission, and thanks to you and Utrice and others, many people contact me, and I appreciate the contacts with stories. What they did in Mozambique is reprehensible, and in Papua New Guinea, and in Colombia, in Ukraine, and in India, in Indonesia, around the world, they find a disaster. They stand in front of the flow of incoming money. They parade themselves around with their rich, powerful friends for photo ops. And live on private, that's not enough for one private jet. They go on these caravans and multiple private jets, presidential suites, giving their donors, you know, not even first class treatment. You know, it's pasha class treatment, all the while pretending they're in charity. And then you get to the question of HIV/AIDS. I, for one, you know, I happen to know members of the Bush family, and I had heard in confidence that, you know, how much they disliked the Clintons. And when I heard in 2004-05 that the elder Bush and Bill were going to get together and help tsunami, I thought to myself, well, I don't know, you know, maybe these two are, there's something good about this now. Maybe they've matured. No, they're cut from the same cloth. And, you know, Bill got involved pretending he's fighting HIV/AIDS. The record shows clearly, an excellent report out of Congress, with lots of sources, shows clearly that the medicines that likely were procured by the HIV/AIDS initiative of the Clinton Foundation were adulterated. Instead, you can look for yourself at the settlement involving the generic drug maker Ranbaxy. Read into the details. It's absolutely disgusting that Hillary Clinton would stand up as she did in the last debate and take credit for cutting the price of AIDS for 11 million patients around the world when they did no such thing. That the process of bringing the price of HIV/AIDS drugs began well before Bill Clinton had anything to do with it. And in fact, while he was president, he encouraged the United States government, and we did obstruct the process in South Africa, and even had the then prevailing International Trade Organization, the appropriate organization, sue the government of South Africa to stop this. So, I mean, it's just preposterous. And, you know, I get involved. You know, the first, I don't know, 46 years of my life, I'm now 60, I had nothing to do with politics. I was very content to just stay quiet. I wasn't involved in the media. But you know, for a while now, I've first got involved exposing corruption and fraud at big companies. And then by chance, I got involved with this. And I'm just, you know, there are a few things lower in life than scamming the public and diverting funds from a charity. But that's exactly what the Clintons have been doing since 1997. And it's time for them to be brought to justice.
Charles, let's go through several of the issues you just discussed in more detail, if you would, please. By the way, Miss Cherry was on the program yesterday, and Nutrice Lead, she has been on the Progressive Radio Network following this program every day, Monday through Friday, for the last 8 years. So
I know.
She's a wonderful spokesperson for those who need a humanistic advocate. Now let's take a look at Haiti, because that was mentioned, and go into what you now know about Haiti and what you know from your own personal research was the outcome for the Haitians because of the Clintons being involved in running, in effect, for 18 months, running the country.
All right. Well, actually, the Clinton Foundation became involved in Haiti in 2003, according to press releases issued by the Clinton Foundation. Now, that's kind of surprising, because when you look at the financial reports of the Clinton Foundation for 2003, they reveal that there were no employees paid by the Clinton Foundation in 2003, and supposedly they had no official international activities. 2003 is when they began to take credit for distributing HIV/AIDS medicines around the world, specifically in Haiti. The medicines that they likely distributed to the Haitians starting in 2003 were certainly adulterated. And they then... You know, over the years, they got more involved. I believe there were problems in Haiti in 2008 with the weather in the Gulf Coast area that affected Haiti as well. And they continued primarily being engaged distributing these adulterated HIV/AIDS drugs into the Haitians. In 2009, Bill was appointed special UN envoy to Haiti. At the same time, a couple months after that, a mysterious company was created in Florida called the William J. Clinton Foundation Corporation. And Bill and others close to Bill began organizing projects to supposedly help Haiti. One of those involved a man named Osorio. And using, at this point, Hillary was Secretary of State, using Bill's contacts and presumably Hillary's, Mr. Osorio received, I want to say, around $15 million from our government for projects involving home building in Haiti. And he decided that rather than do that, he'd spend it on himself, on mansions, on cocaine, on women, et cetera. He's now in federal prison. That project, which was called Innovita Homes, it was classic Washington, D.C. They got, I believe Jeb Bush was asked to serve on the board. I think Wesley Clark may have been involved. And, of course, various Clinton acolytes were involved in that thing. It's a complete scam. And, of course, money was taken from We the People, supposedly to help people in Haiti, and fraudsters, thankfully one of them's in prison, but others, other fraudsters involved with it are still on the loose. In the middle of all this, on January 12, 2010, tragedy struck Haiti, and that's a country, and you would think, if we look around the world with the history in this country, if we had to pick one country to help, after all, the island of Haiti is you know, where Christopher Columbus landed, in that big island, then called Hispaniola. We have ancient ties as a country to that place. We have ties through France to that place. You would think that if we were going to believe as this country that we could help any other foreign country, that we'd think about our brothers and sisters in Haiti and actually help them, not pretend that we're helping them, but actually help the 10 million people resident on this tragic island of Haiti. So instead of doing that very quickly, Bill immediately made announcements that something called Clinton Foundation Haiti was going to raise money for Haiti. There is no such thing. And the streams of money that started pouring into the various Clinton Foundation offices, no one really knows whatever actually happened to the total amount of money that was sent to those offices. Then they got together with the George W. Bush team. They slapped together the legal documents that need to be put together. They created something called the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund. And that thing, I believe from memory, I don't have the numbers in front of me, declared incoming of $50 million of revenue and spent around less than $10 million in 2010. And you ask yourself, why? You know, why would there have to be a delay in 2010? I mean, it's not as if the Clinton Foundation wasn't already there. They've been there since 2003. It's not as if it's, you know, the moon we're going to. I mean, it's not that far away. Why were they only able to distribute so little money? And why, and this is a serious fraud. I mean, there's a woman, a congressperson down in Florida named Corinne Brown, who has her, you know, people have problems with her. But she faces 350 years in prison over an $800,000 slush fund. The way you figure things like that out, or when they're in the records, there's inconsistency in the records. Well, in the main Clinton Foundation filing for 2010, the largest grant is to this Clinton-Bush-Haiti fund. And they list out the amount at $37.2 million, roughly. They say that they gave a $4 million non-cash grant to this foundation in the parent company filings. But they list the address as a post office box in Maryland. They do it in the filing for 2010 that was filed in 2011, and they do it also in the filing for amended filing for 2010 that was filed in 2015. There is no Clinton-Bush-Haiti office in Baltimore, Maryland. There never is. There never was. So why do they list it? Where did that money really go? And for this Clinton-Bush-Haiti fund, you're supposed to list out, sparing you the technicalities, there is a rule that you're supposed to list out all your foreign bank accounts and declare whether you have any. This entity declares that it has no foreign bank accounts. How can you have no foreign bank accounts and operate in Haiti? You know, they don't use the American dollar as the primary currency there. There's no way this is possible. And, you know, so that's at the, you know, sort of the micro level. These are the small amounts of money. In addition to operating, you know, a fictitious fund, the Clinton Foundation Haiti Fund, and this close to being more legal fund, Clinton Bush Haiti Fund, Bill got involved with a former prime minister setting up something called the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission. And that was the entity that was supposed to direct and police all the billions of dollars that went towards Haiti. Now, in my experience, when you've got something good to brag about, you actually get an accountant to check it. You're concerned about making sure that you do a good work, and you have independent third parties check it. Well, wouldn't you know that this former prime minister of Haiti and Bill Clinton have repeatedly refused to allow any independent third parties to check and see what happened to these billions of dollars? Some say it's $10 billion. The Haitians protesting this week in the street said six. I've heard numbers as high as 14. Now, to put that number in perspective, the total output and income of Haiti is around $10 billion. So in the United States, it's, let's call it $11 trillion. That would be like giving the United States $11 trillion and saying, we're not going to tell you what happened to it. Now, how can you responsibly do that? How can you go and do that starting in 2010, refuse to file the kind of reports that have to be filed, refuse to get real accountants in, do this to the poorest people in the Western Hemisphere, go around and pretending that you're qualified to be president of the United States? I mean, these people should be in prison just for what they've done in Haiti. And I say that as somebody, I'm still a registered Republican. It's not a partisan issue. You don't step on the neck of somebody who is downtrodden, who's prostrate, who's, you know, lost their family members, lost their place to live, and steal the money that good do-gooders are sending towards you. You just don't do that. But these people are people who have no shame. They don't understand the word shame. And so our brothers and sisters in Haiti, once again, they're on their backs. And the Clintons are talking about going back down there. I think they should be barred from entering the country.
Charles, I'd like to thank you for all the good work you've done. It's unfortunate that the mainstream media has not chosen to be honest, open, and objective in looking at the Clintons. It's as if there's about somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,000 or 3,000 very influential policymakers in Washington, and they seem to know each other. Whether it's Democrat or Republican is irrelevant. They all work together. And in doing that, we the people are not given the type of support, and our democracy does not function as it should. These people, these oligarchs, these extraordinarily influential people, they're both the policymakers, and they also control much of the media, and that's unfortunate. So thank you for the new work. If anyone is interested, give us the background. And by the way, the Charles Ortel, O-R-T-E-L, he received his undergraduate degree from Yale University and MBA from Harvard Business School. And he's at charlesortel.com. And there he has a lot of information exposing the Clintons and their foundation. So I just thank you for all the good work you're doing, Charles.
Well, thank you, Gary. Thanks for your great work, and thanks for having me on.
Okay, I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day.